Republicans are pressing for the release of the name of the whistleblower who sparked the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. During yesterday's first public hearings in the House Intelligence Committee, Republican U.S. Congressman Jim Jordan had this exchange with Democratic Chair U.S. Congressman Adam Schiff.
Just to ask a clarifying question, do you anticipate when we might vote on the ability to have the whistleblower in front of us, something you, of the 435 members of Congress, you are the only member who knows who that individual is, and your staff is the only staff of any member of Congress who's had a chance to talk with that individual. We would like that opportunity. When might that happen in this proceeding today?
First, as the gentleman knows, that's a false statement. I do not know the identity of the whistleblower, and I'm determined to make sure that identity is protected. But as I said to Mr. Conaway, you'll have an opportunity after the witnesses testify to make a motion to subpoena any witness and compel a vote.
Some conservative news outlets have named an alleged whistleblower. Wisconsin Public Radio is following NPR's guidance, and we are not naming the individual. But what, if anything, is stopping Republicans, including President Trump, from outing the whistleblower? And what kind of protections are in place to protect someone who blows the whistle? This is a conversation that involves you. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We're wondering, where have you seen whistleblowers really make meaningful strides for democracy? Have you seen wrongdoing where you work? How did you respond? Did you consider yourself a whistleblower? And what place do you see whistleblowers having in democracy? Is it a political move? Are there motivations at play? Or is this really an apolitical act? You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. We're having this conversation about what it means to be a whistleblower and what's fair. Once you are a whistleblower, does that mean you are entitled to protections? Or does it mean that it's a free-for-all, that you've spoken up and now people are allowed and able to know your name? 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keeley Bultina. We're having a conversation about whether Republicans can legally out the whistleblower who triggered the Trump impeachment inquiry. And Dan Meyer is our guest. He's blown the whistle three times, used to lead the program that the whistleblower in the Trump-Ukraine call used to file their complaint. Dan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
So glad to be here.
Help us understand. We seem to have different versions of what it means to be a whistleblower. What is it exactly?
So a whistleblower is somebody who lawfully discloses wrongdoing to somebody who can fix the problem. So the confusion often comes when people think of the 1970s model of whistleblowers going to like the New York Times during the Nixon administration. Non-intel federal employees can go to the media, but the theory is simply that when they go to the media, they're informing Congress and Congress can then fix the problem. For people like this whistleblower, they cannot go to the media. And so a whistleblower, tightly defined, would be somebody who goes to, for instance, an inspector general or goes through an inspector general to Congress, to the House or Senate Intelligence Committee staff. So it's the whistleblower is somebody who's actually not public. It's somebody who goes through official channels, and that's done to control classified information so that we don't inadvertently leak classified information.
So if you're a whistleblower, are you guaranteed anonymity?
No, absolutely not. So this is a big misconception. Now, as a matter of policy, many inspectors general or heads of agencies will want to have anonymity for whistleblower, but it's just a policy option. The actual protections under the law, the inspector general himself cannot reveal the whistleblower's identity unless it's required in the course of an investigation, so it's qualified anonymity. And then there is no binding law on a member of Congress divulging the name of the whistleblower. It would be a policy decision not to do that unless it's a rule of the committee in question. So unless the congressman is on like the House Intelligence or the Senate Intelligence Committee, which do have rules about divulging confidentiality of sources. But the congressman is not on those committees, then he or she could conceivably reveal the name of the whistleblower and not have a penalty.
Yeah. How important is it generally to know who's blowing the whistle? How much does that matter?
So as a federal investigator, I used to run these investigations for about 14 years. You receive a lot of information. Some of it comes anonymously. Some of it comes from sources that are identified. So if you have an unidentified source, you need to corroborate that. You need to find independent basis for those facts. And if the person doesn't want to have their name ascribed to the information, they don't want to be in the report or they don't want to show up at a hearing, you have to understand that, okay, you've received the information, but you have to find it somewhere else, and often in a couple of other places, because every fact you want to corroborate by two or three sources. So if you have anonymity, if you want to protect a source, if you want to bury a source, is what the term we use in the federal investigative field, then you have to go find that information independently from somebody else, and then you could include it in your report. So it's not necessary to have the whistleblower's identity known, because in this particular instance in Washington right now, there's been corroboration through other sources. In fact, you're probably soon going to get even more accurate information than the whistleblower had through sources that'll be in open hearings and testify with the individual out in the open.
Let's bring Nate in Milwaukee into this conversation. Nate, what's your take here?
Hi. I hope that they do not release the whistleblower's name. I compare this to when somebody calls 911 and the police arrive, are supposed to check things out and see if it matches what the person said. And not only that, one of the protections we have against corruption is people who are trying to blow the whistle. So not only can the whistleblower potentially lose his job if Trump finds him, but it's hurts our ability to defend ourselves against corruption if we allow whistleblowers to be harmed.
Nate, thanks for that comment. Dan, is that concept one of the tenets? I mean, you were the executive director for intelligence community whistleblowing and source protection. Was that a value that you held when doing these investigations?
Oh, absolutely. And Nate's got a great point. There's a real good Milwaukee sense there. The idea is to hoover in as much information as possible through your hotlines, through your intake process. And then as an investigator, you sift through. You want to bias the system to creating as much disclosure as possible. And one of the ways you create that bias is you allow people to be anonymous when they bring information into, for instance, an inspector general. We were so scrupulous about this when I worked for the inspector general at the time, Irvin Charles McCullough III. Chuck would allow me to redact disclosures that went to the Director of National Intelligence before they went to the committees on the Hill. So just like this whistleblower, it went to Inspector General Atkinson and then to the acting Director of National Intelligence, Joe McGuire. Then it went up to the Hill. In our case, it went into my boss, Chuck McCullough, and then Jim Clapper, the DNI at the time, would receive it. And Chuck would allow me actually to redact the disclosures and take the names out of the individuals when it went to the DNI. And I would call the DNI staff ahead of time and say, look, I'm not trying to insult you by removing the source's name, but on this particular issue, there might be people on your floor over at the headquarters that I don't want them to see the name of the whistleblower. So we're just going to button it up and send it up to the Hill. And Director Clapper was brilliant on this. I mean, he understood the policy and the need to protect sources. So he would say, fine, Dan, that's not a problem. Just thank the whistleblower for being a patriotic American.
Dan Meyer is a lawyer in Washington, D.C., a three-time whistleblower, also used to oversee the program that the whistleblower on Trump's Ukraine call used to file their complaint. And let's go ahead and bring Helen in the Madison area into the conversation now. Helen, what's your take here?
Okay. Well, you have people that say have a conversation. My question for everyone is, have you ever had a conversation where one person took it one way and another person took it another way and was offended by it? It happens every day. So when I've been watching this Congress thing for the last couple of days, and all they're talking about is feelings and what he thinks, nobody can tell what anybody thinks or how they feel. Some people come off obtuse. Some people come off cold. Some people come off warm and friendly. No one can read what anybody's thinking.
Sure. And Helen's talking about really focusing on interpretation and not the facts. How critical, Dan, are facts to a whistleblower complaint?
Well, I would recruit Helen to be a federal investigator. That's exactly the sort of skepticism you bring into an investigation. We would frequently ask a witness, do you believe that or do you know it? You know, is this a fact in your head or is it something you perceived? So the critical question here is, and in this matter that's unfolding in Washington right now, I don't think there's a lot of difference on the facts themselves. I think even the president has conceded some of the facts. I think it is a lot about interpretation. And so the jurors, if this goes to the Senate for trial, the senators who are sitting in judgment of the president will have to sift through exactly that analysis that Helen has presented, and they'll have to decide these facts as they're presented. Is this simply diplomacy, sort of bare-knuckled diplomacy, or is this bribery? Those would be the two extremes. And the difference between those interpretations on the same facts is getting to the core of what was going on inside the White House. And that's why people with direct knowledge of those communications is very important. The word hearsay is getting very difficult in this process because this is not a court and hearsay doesn't really apply. What people need to focus on is the evidence direct? Did the person who's presenting the evidence see it, smell it, taste it, hear it themselves? Or is it indirect? Did it come through another party? You can have a lot of indirect evidence and move forward with a finding based on that indirect evidence, but you have to have a lot of people bringing you indirect evidence that all lines up and shows a certain interpretation of the facts. You can have less direct evidence, and that direct evidence will prove very quickly for you that there was a problem or there was not a problem. So it's a balancing between the two. That's what federal investigators do all the time. So Helen's got a great point.
Steve from Sun Prairie wants to join our conversation about protections for whistleblowers. Steve, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my question is, or a comment really too, is I believe strongly in the whistle protection law. It makes sense. The problem is the investigation should be done in secret. So things should not be leaked out while the investigation is going on. It reminds me so much of the John Doe investigation in Wisconsin, where the people that were being talked about had to be quiet, but yet people were leaking information out. So how do you balance that out?
Steve, thanks for that question. Yeah, the balance between what the public needs and deserves to know and, doing things confidentially. What do you think, Dan?
Tight discipline is what you need. And if you want an example of an investigation where that was not the case, some of my colleagues back at the Office of the Inspector General for the Defense Department were involved in the investigation of whether Pat Tillman, the NFL quarterback who was serving in Afghanistan, was killed or whether it was friendly fire. And there were some leaks in that investigation that were very unhelpful for the team trying to wrap it up and come to a coherent and solid set of findings based on the facts. So, yes, no, you need to have deep discipline on that team. Chairman Schiff's team is pretty disciplined in that regard. There have been leaks, I agree. There have been leaks on both sides, and that's part of the nature of the Congress. It is a leaky organization, and it always gave us great trepidation inside the intelligence community to send our sources up there because we realized that it is the people's house, and it tends to run in a very open and transparent way, and it's very difficult to discipline it. But yes, no, in the best of all circumstances, you button it up, you complete the investigation, and then you move to the more public aspects where the product of the investigation is briefed not only to the other members of Congress and eventually to the jurors in the Senate, but also to the American people. Because remember, in the end, the American people are sovereign in this entire arrangement. Right? We have no king. We have no queen in America. We the people in Congress assembled are the sovereign. And in the end, those senators, when they vote on the president, will be voting based on their perception of what the folks at home are thinking about this whole issue, which is why in the end, once you get all the facts all rolled up and you have your findings, it's going to be polls and local polls that determine actually how those senators vote.
All right. Certainly, this is an evolving conversation, and we'll be back to it many times. Dan, thank you so much for your time with us.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Dan Meyer is a lawyer in Washington, D.C., and a 3-time whistleblower. And we've been talking about the whistleblower's identity and whether it should be released in the Trump impeachment inquiry. This conversation continues online at Central Time at WPR.org, or you can tweet at Central Time WPR. And coming up tomorrow on Central Time, media outlets argue it's the public's right to know about criminal charges. And some arrest voters are even open to the public. Our guest examines the effects of crime coverage. We weigh the potential risks of not reporting the information with the importance of accuracy and fairness. All that and more. Explore it with us tomorrow on Central Time from 3 o'clock until 7.